Well, how's everybody doing today? You feel bad about laughing when someone gets hurt, but it's just too hard not to, isn't it? Well, my name is Shane. I'm one of the pastors here at Timberlake. I oversee our Issaquah campus. It's great to have you here this weekend. Hello as well to those of you watching at the theater in Issaquah, in Duval, and online. Well, the countdown to fall is in full swing. How many of you have already finished all of your back-to-school shopping? Okay, a few of us, yeah. It's slowly starting to get dark a little bit earlier. Football season is ramping up, which of course none of us in here care about at all. But it's about to get busy, isn't it? From getting our kids back in the nighttime and morning routines to fall sports, to homework, to projects at work, oftentimes fall can be the busiest time of the year. And for some of us, that gets us excited. And for other of us, we're about to go into a mild depression due to the stress involved and the lack of vitamin D we're all about to endure for the next 9 months. I've said before, my wife Haley and I have been married for 6 years now. We have a 15-month-old baby named Henley who just started to walk, which is exciting and terrifying at the same time. If you have kids, you know how difficult it can be sometimes to stay connected as a couple. Kids can kind of consume. And so my wife and I, to keep our marriage strong, we go on 2 date nights a week. I go on Tuesday nights, she goes on Thursday nights. It's a great plan. But in all honesty, it can be easy for all of us, for our lives to get full. And for that to cause a strain and sometimes stress, not only in our lives, but in the lives of the people around us if we're not careful. What is the most stressful thing in your life right now? Don't point at them, just think about it. Maybe for you it's a situation at work, or perhaps for you it's a relationship that's maybe on edge. Maybe for you it's your finances or an investment. For you, maybe it's some news that you're hoping won't come, but expecting that it will. Stress is something that all of us deal with, and it comes in different forms. We call it different things. We call it worry. We call it anxiety. We call it burnout. We call it depression. Some stress inducers we have really no control over, and other stress causes are kind of self-inflicted. The other day, I was sitting at home with my wife, and she got a text from her mom that said, "Your dad's brand new truck just got stolen." So, of course, she picks up the phone and immediately calls her mom. And her mom says that they are out to dinner at P.F. Chang's in Alderwood, and they came out after dinner, and the truck was gone. And so the mall security is there filling out a report. Haley's dad is on the phone with the police. They're on their way. And everyone's freaking out. And then right before the police arrive, Haley's dad realizes that he parked in a different lot. And so the situation goes from high stress to high embarrassment as they have to quickly switch gears. According to the American Institute of Stress, 44% of Americans feel more stressed today than they did 5 years ago. 1 out of 5 Americans experience what they call extreme stress, shaking, heart palpitations, depression. 3 out of 4 doctor's visits are stress-related. 40% of stressed people overeat or eat unhealthy things. 44% of stressed people lose sleep every single night. Maybe you're here and you've been feeling stressed. You say, "Well, I wasn't until you started talking about it." Really, we're in this series called Jesus Said What? And we're looking at different topics that Jesus addressed and what we can learn about them. I truly believe that the way of Jesus is really the best way to live. That the way Jesus talked and the way Jesus lived and the way Jesus interacted with people not only gives us great teaching, but a great model to follow. And so today, I want to look at, Jesus said what about stress, the hurried life? If you'd take the note sheet out of your program, the beginning passage that I want to look at, and really the foundational one for today, is found in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. And here's what it says. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. This is Jesus talking. Now, in that same passage, in a different translation, in the Message translation, which instead of a word-for-word translation, it's more of a paraphrasing, but sometimes can give us good insight and context. And so that same passage in the Message translation says this: are you tired, worn out, burnt out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. The big idea for this weekend is this. Jesus came so that we could experience peace. Jesus came so that we could experience peace. And that's what I want to focus on today. So where do we start? How do we experience this rest and this peace that Jesus offers? I wrote down five guiding principles when it comes to the peace that Jesus describes. This isn't an exhaustive list by any means, but these are some principles that we can learn from Scripture to help us as we deal with the stress that we all face. The first one is this. I experience the peace that Jesus described when I acknowledge that I'm not at my best when I'm in a hurry. I'm not at my best when I'm in a hurry. I read a study the other day that said that 55% of Americans wish that they had produced more the day before. There can be this sense in life that there's never enough time, that there's always more to do. And so we can kind of feel like we need to hurry through life. And busy isn't always bad, but busy isn't always better either. Having a full schedule isn't wrong unless it's negatively impacting our relationships or our work or our faith. In Psalms 127, verse 2, it says, it's useless to rise early and go to bed late and work your worried fingers to the bone. Don't you know that He, God, enjoys giving rest to those He loves? Work your worried fingers to the bone. Isn't that a great mental picture right there? You go, go, go. You get up early. You stay up late. You move from one thing to the next without taking a break. And what the psalmist is saying is that there can be a diminishing return. That ultimately there are negative effects of a hurried life. Several years ago, two Princeton University psychologists did an experiment that was inspired by a Bible story. Jesus told a story about a man who was mugged and left for dead on the side of the road in between Jerusalem and Jericho. A priest and a Levite, people who fit the religious description in Jesus' time, walked by him on the other side of the road. And the only person who stopped to help was a Samaritan, someone who was culturally would have been looked down upon in the day. And so John Darley and Daniel Batson decided to replicate the story of the Good Samaritan with seminary students. A few variables were introduced. The students were interviewed and asked why they wanted to go into the ministry. There were a variety of responses, but the vast majority said they wanted to go into the ministry to help people. They were then asked to prepare a short sermon, half of them on the story of the Good Samaritan and the other half on various other topics. Finally, they were told to go over to a building on campus and present their sermon. Along the way, researchers had positioned an actor to play the part of the man who had been mugged. He was slouched over in an alley, groaning loud enough for passerbys to hear and to see that he was obviously in distress. The researchers hypothesized that those who said that they wanted to go into ministry to help people, and those who had just studied and prepared a sermon on the Good Samaritan would be most likely to help. However, that actually wasn't the case at all. And the reason was the final variable that the researchers introduced. Right before the student was sent off to give their sermon, the researcher looked at his watch and said one of two things. To some students, he said, "Oh, you're late. They were expecting you a few minutes ago. You better hurry." To other students, he looked at his watch and said, "You're actually early. They're not expecting you for a while, but why don't you head over there?" 10% of the students who were in a hurry stopped to help, while 63% of the students who weren't in a hurry stopped to help. In multiple occasions, students who were about to go and give a sermon on the topic of the Good Samaritan literally stepped over the man in the alley on their way to give this message. It's interesting. It didn't matter whether someone wanted to help people or whether someone had just read and was preparing to preach on the topic of the Good Samaritan. The only thing that mattered was whether or not they were in a hurry. The words, "you are late," had the effect of turning someone who was normally compassionate into someone who is indifferent to suffering. I'm not at my best when I'm in a hurry. I don't know about you, but I tend to make stupid mistakes when I'm in a hurry. Have you ever been in a rush to leave your house and all of a sudden you get out and you look and you're wearing like two different pairs of shoes? Yeah, me neither. There's a reason why runners pace themselves, because you can actually get further faster if you run at the right pace. Oftentimes, when we're in a hurry, we can be less patient and less kind, and we tend to point out the negative a lot more often. When I'm in a hurry, I tend to be more stressed and less productive. And instead of focusing on and enjoying what I'm doing, I'm thinking about what I have next. Sometimes things that normally wouldn't even bother us or get to us, they can push us over the edge when we're in a hurry. And we say things and we do things that we regret. Not because we wanted to or we were planning on it, but because I'm not at my best when I'm in a hurry. And sometimes the best thing we can do is just slow down and take a deep breath. And in some seasons in life, they're busy and full. But I've always been impressed by the people who they have a full schedule, but yet they're still fully present in the moment. And instead of being in a rush to get to the next thing, they're fully engaged and fully enjoying and fully present in the current thing. What have you been hurrying through that maybe deserves a little bit more of your time and attention? Well, I also experienced the peace that Jesus described when, number two, I acknowledge that it's easier to measure success than it is to measure significance. If you manage anything, you know that what gets measured is what gets done. A new leader of an organization took over, and the former leader was giving an exit interview. And he handed the new leader three envelopes, labeled 1, 2, and 3. And he said, "I'm giving you these three letters just as my predecessor gave me. And you're to open them in order when you come against adversity." He said, okay. A few months down the road, he faced his first hurdle. And he remembered the letters. And so he went and he opened the first one. And it said, "Blame it on the previous leadership." And so he did. And it worked. And things continued to move forward. Sometime later, there was the next major problem. And he opened letter number two. And it simply said, "Reorganize." Once again, he was saved. The organization continued to move forward. He was hailed as a hero. Everything was great. Sometime later, a problem arose that was bigger than the other two combined. And with a smile, he thought, "I know what to do." And he went and he got the final letter and he opened it up. And it said, "Prepare three letters." Nothing in life lasts forever. Sometimes we can fill our lives with what we think will make us successful, but then we don't find significance, and we're disappointed because we thought the two were the same. But we all know people who their lives are full, and yet they don't feel fulfilled. In 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24, Paul writes, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Therefore, do not run like someone running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize." Paul's saying, I don't want to get to the end of the race and realize that I missed the whole point. Sometimes we can get discouraged and stressed out. And we can feel bad about where we are and what we've accomplished and what we've done simply because we're measuring the wrong things. Pastor Ben mentioned that the staff attended Bill Hybels' leadership summit a few weeks ago. And during one of the sessions, Bill Hybels said this. He said, "Find God's plan for your life. Serve people joyfully. And the satisfaction of your life will follow." At the same conference, Tyler Perry, award-winning actor and film writer, said, "People will forget what you said to them. People will forget what you did to them. But people won't forget how you made them feel." Measure the right things. Well, I also experienced the peace that Jesus described when I acknowledged that, number three, I can't force it, but I can create space for it. I can't force it, but I can create space for it. In Mark chapter 6, it says this, "The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat," underline those words, "did not even have a chance to eat, he," Jesus, "said to them, 'Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest.'" Now, the disciples, they weren't doing anything wrong. In fact, just the opposite. They had just gotten back from a ministry trip where they had done a lot of good things and helped a lot of people. But their schedule was full and they were busy. And so they didn't have time to eat, which in the grand scheme of things probably isn't the end of the world, is it? But unfortunately, sometimes we can replace that word "eat" with other things. With important things, like pray, or church, or family, or rest. And a lot of times, what happens is that we can miss out because we don't have margin. Margin would be having money left over at the end of the month. Margin would be getting to a meeting 10 minutes early so that you're not stressed or in a rush. Margin would be having extra time to think or reflect or relax. Margin is having the emotional capacity to deal with a problem that arises without getting overwhelmed. Margin is the space between you and temptation. Margin would be having time to volunteer and not be stressed out about it. Having time to get interrupted and not freak out about it. Margin would be having two or three nights a week where you don't have anything on the calendar. Margin is something, unfortunately, most of us don't have. Margin is about creating space. I can't force myself not to feel stressed or anxious or overwhelmed. I can't force myself to feel peace. But what can I do? I can create space for those feelings to happen. I can't force it, but I can create space for it. You may be here and you'd say, you know, I don't have a great relationship with my child. I was busy and I traveled a lot when they were young and things happened and situations, but I'm trying right now, and it's not really working. What do I do? Well, you can't force it, obviously, but what can you do? You can create space for the relationship to develop. And it may not be easy and it may not be quick, but you can create space for it to happen. You see, oftentimes we try to force the feeling instead of cultivating the circumstances that create the feeling. I put on your note sheet a few things that I think we would all benefit from if we created space for. What would your life look like if you decided to practice a regular Sabbath? The word Sabbath simply means a day of rest. In Exodus chapter 20, it's not on your note sheet, but God said you have 6 days in which to do your work, but the seventh day is a day of rest dedicated to me. We should schedule time for rest and refreshing. For many people, this includes regularly attending church. It's important for each of us to make time daily and weekly for our bodies and our souls to be refreshed. Also, make time for silence and solitude. It's important for all of us to take time to simply turn off and unplug. Jesus often, before big moments in the Gospels, would get away by himself for time of prayer or reflection. In Matthew 4, before he went into his public ministry. In Luke chapter 6, before he chose his disciples. In Luke chapter 22, before he went to the cross. Jesus got alone. And it's not always easy in a noisy and busy and fully connected world. And sometimes you're a single mom and you've got to get creative. But it's always worth it. And then find a way to serve others. When we help others, it takes the focus off of us. And this is something that Jesus modeled time after time. I don't know about you, but when I'm busy, I tend to become unavailable. I have stuff to do. I turn inward and I get more focused. But what's interesting, if you read through the account of Jesus, what you'll find is the closer to death Jesus got, the more available he became. Because Jesus knew that what you're doing is never as important as who you're doing it for. Number four, often stress is a sign that something other than Jesus is at the center of my life. Sometimes we'll talk about putting Jesus first. And if you were to create a priority list, you would maybe put Jesus or God in the number one spot. And then number two would maybe be family and then career and health or however you would organize it. But we give Jesus the top spot. And often we have great intentions, but it doesn't really work out that well when you get down to the grind of life. Because what does it really mean to put Jesus before my family? Like, do I intentionally ignore my family so that I can spend more time praying to Jesus? You know, and I think we can take this too far, but I don't think that Jesus wants to be before anything. I think that Jesus wants to be at the center of everything. And so it's not Jesus and then my family, it's Jesus in my family. It's not Jesus and then my career, it's Jesus in my career. It's not Jesus and then my health, it's Jesus in. Because when Jesus is at the center, when everything revolves around him, he not only becomes first in order, but he becomes the center of the orbit of my life. And when Jesus is at the center, everything else finds its proper place. A few years ago, we bought this lamp that had to be put together. And so I took it out of the box, and my wife handed me the instructions, and I threw them away because I'm a man, and that's just what we do. And so I proceed to put this lamp together on my own, and we get to the end, and there's some extra pieces, which Haley is asking me about, and I'm saying, well, it's really generous that they gave us all these extra pieces. That's nice of them. And Haley's not buying it, and so we pull out the instructions, and I put the lamp together completely upside down and horribly wrong, and we had to take it all apart and start all over. And honestly, in that moment, in that situation, pride was probably at the center. And really, there's an order to things that when we get wrong, we end up dealing with things that we were never meant to deal with. Isaiah chapter 40, starting in verse 30, it says, "Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. There is a peace and a rest. There is a strength that comes when Jesus is at the center of our lives. And really, this leads us to our final thought. I experience the peace that Jesus described when I acknowledge that what happens in me doesn't have to mirror what is happening around me. I can't control what happens, but I can control what happens from controlling me. Psalm 118 says, "All the nations surrounded me, but in the name of the Lord I cut them down. I was pushed back and about to fall, but the Lord helped me. The Lord is my strength and my defense. He has become my salvation." The psalmist references the fact that they were surrounded by hostile nations. Now, we don't know who the author of this psalm was, but it is most likely a king of Israel describing a battle in which their forces were surrounded. It reminds me of a great story coming out of World War II. In 1944, during the Battle of the Bulge, American forces were completely surrounded by the German army at Bastogne, Belgium. It was bitter cold, and the only thing more scarce than supplies was morale. It looked like the American army was defeated, and the general commander sent General McAuliffe an ultimatum demanding immediate surrender. Now, I love this. General McAuliffe called his troops together, and here's what he said. He said, "Men, we are surrounded by the enemy. We have the greatest opportunity ever presented in army. We can attack in any direction." And so instead of choosing to surrender, they chose to fight. And ultimately, this was one of the turning points in World War II. I love that image because I wonder if some of you have ever felt surrounded. You know what? If your debt and your finances, if they're a source of stress, doesn't it feel like you are surrounded by that debt? I think sometimes we make a mistake, and instead of moving forward, it can feel like we're surrounded by regret, and it's like, how do I get through this? We make a mistake, and guilt surrounds us. We think about our future and anxiety surrounds us. All of us have probably been there. Now, I would probably suggest that even that is more preferable than being surrounded by an army with sharp objects trying to kill you. But I love the way this king, this psalmist, draws on the strength of the Lord. Sometimes we can assume all the stress and all the anxiety because we feel like we have to take care of it ourselves. But there is a strength of the Lord. There is a work that God can do in our lives and through our lives and on our behalf if we let Him. Philippians 4, verse 6 says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." What happens in me doesn't have to mirror what's happening around me. The peace of God, which transcends all understanding, which doesn't always make sense, which doesn't always line up or match my circumstances. There is this peace that God can bring into our lives where we can feel surrounded and yet still feel secure. As we close our services today, I want you to hear the story of a lady named Dejana who attends our Issaquah campus and who experienced this peace in a real way this last year.